yeah, you need to do your client value analysis. Your clients, and this is worth jotting down by this page, your clients will tell you the story about where you're going right and wrong. Your clients will tell you the story about where you're going right and wrong. They will shout at you, your problem is, are you listening? The story of where you're going right. Let me give an example of that. Whenever you're talking to your clients, can I make a suggestion of a framework? Whenever I try and educate, I don't train, train dogs, but educate people, I try and tell you, this is why you need to do this, this is why you need to understand this. There's a reason behind this. Secondly, this is what you need to learn to do. Thirdly, let's try and work out together how we do it. And fourthly, you might ask me, well, give us an example. And I've discussed this with you before, different people learn in different ways. There's some people couldn't give a hoot about why we do it. Just not interested. They're not into concepts and principles. They're into just tell me how to cotton pick and do the thing. Just tell me how to do it. So I need to cover all four bases with all of you because there are all these learning styles in this room and I don't know who's who. So let me give an example of this. Simon Holdsworth down in the Southern team, in a circle, Cornwall, based in Cornwall. Lovely guy. When I first met him, I thought, oh, he's a bit pompous. And you may think that when you first... He's the loveliest, loveliest man. He's just a lovely guy. I met him in probably the nicest meeting I've ever had in my life because of the surroundings. Facing a beach in Cornwall. It was idyllic. It was October and we were in our shirt sleeves. It was just dream world stuff. And the waves were pounding and there's Jamie Oller's restaurant behind us where we'd have lunch and we just chatted and he told me about his seven children. I really got to like this man. And then I said, let's have a look at your clients. And so he did an analysis for me, took him a couple of weeks to do, and he's good at analysis. He used to be a fund manager. He's been travelling all the whole world, Far East, Asian Pacific, as a very, very competent fund manager. Analysis is their way of behaving. He analysed his clients, and everything that he told about his clients was wrong, because the analysis said something else. And a couple of things happened as a result of that analysis. Three things. One, he found out that his most valuable clients in terms of recurrent revenue, predictable recurrent revenue, were between the ages of 58 and 72. It was that accurate. 58 and 72. Not 75, those are the most... this one nest of clients. Secondly, he travelled in five counties and we worked out that about 90% of his recurrent revenue came from one county. Cornwall. So guess what he decided to do then? Never to travel outside of Cornwall ever again. As a result of that, in October of 15 months, he's gone from 2.5 million under management to 18 million under management. Because he listened to what his clients were telling him and he obeyed. Brilliant analysis. Okay. Satisfaction metrics. What on earth is all that about? Niall, what's satisfaction metrics all about? That's pompous language for you. Bottom of page 12. What do you think that means?
I assume it's about the client being satisfied as well as yourself.
What do I mean by metrics?
How you measure it?
Yeah. And what have we said about measuring satisfaction in previous workshops? How do you do that? How do you measure it?
Survey.
Yeah. Get a professional survey done. Advisor Impact specialise in professional surveys. Don't try and guess this stuff. Almost certainly you'll be wrong. And we spent a long time on that. Page 13. So this is preparation for understanding, well, who do I want to attract and why? Your clients will tell you who you want to attract more of. Company. What do you think I mean by page 13? Peter, any thoughts? What do I mean by sustainable business?
A business that
will run without you taking direct control or getting your finger stuck in every single thing that's going on in the business.
Okay.
I, one that you can step back from that will continue to have momentum.
Right. So almost all of you have come to me because you've said to me, I'm really good at what I do, I earn good money, you know, great turnover, but it's consuming me. It's just not sustainable without me. And so if you're going to go out and market and attract quality clients, what this is saying to you is then make sure that every person you attract from now on that comes to you, not you chasing them, is going to be part of that sustainable business. Will they be able to help you build a sustainable business that is long-term, that will eventually release you and give you more free time? Is that the kind of client you're going to attract? If it's not, stop talking to them. That's not the kind of client you're going to attract by your strategy and your tactics, then stop doing it. Just stop them. Get them. What's the phrase we use for getting rid of clients in marketing, in the advisor gym?
Alienating.
Yeah. So the phrase is? Alienate your non-clients. If I was a guest, I'd write that down. Alienate your non-clients. Talk in such a way that you completely hack them off, that they're almost repulsed by you, because they just don't get you, and you know you don't get them either, and you don't really want to. Alienate your non-clients. Wendy said to me, and Nigel echoed, in the first 3 minutes of your presentation, I felt like cutting my throat and jumping out the window, or something like that. Because I was...
The scar goes.
You know, and those of you that are in the inner circle know that I love, you know, I just like being liked. I love getting close to people. I get very close and intimate and deep. So this stuff I do in the workshops is to alienate my non-clients. I just hack them off. I do it on purpose. And then after that, you find that's not me at all. That's just kind of a filter mechanism. I just get people annoyed and upset and they want to strangle me and hang me and stuff like that. I just want to see who I can annoy by just saying, you know what, I don't want you. I don't want you anywhere near me. But if you think some of this rings a bell with you, we might want to talk later on. Now, I'm not saying that's the right way to do it, but I'm just testing out different methods of filtering out and alienating people I don't want to work with anyway. And you need to do the same thing too. Okay, I'm not going to spend time on SWOT and client desires, but know your strengths and weaknesses. Know them. And make sure that they match who you attract. Okay, page 14. Stuart, talk to me about page 14, competition. What do you think I'm saying there?
What we're looking at there is the competition, and this is not just the obvious competition of the business next door, but the competition for clients that we don't see. So it's researching what else is available to our ideal clients.
Okay.
And then looking at what we offer that's unique, the outcomes that our ideal clients will want.
Okay.
Making sure that that's what we're doing, and we're doing that more clearly than the competition.
Very good. On the right-hand side, there's a couple of words there. Graham, what's that all about? Innovation, reinvention.
Can't stand still, obviously. It's a moving project all the time.
Why can't you stand still?
Because if you stand still, your opposition won't.
Okay.
You know, they're learning and refining their technique, so you have to make sure that you are at the cutting edge of the process all the time, really, and reinventing your systems and processes.
Yeah. The beauty about competition is if you recognise it's there, it will force you to innovate and reinvent yourself. That's the beauty about competition. Competition is great because it stops you getting lazy. Can you just, you're at the coalface as much as I get to meet hundreds of advisors. You're also at the coalface feeling what's going on out there. Tell me who your competition is. Do you want to share some of that with me around the room? Who's your competition?
Thousands.
That you feel. Now, of course, you may not feel it, and they may still be your competition, you just don't know it yet, but who's your competition? Accountants? Is that John?
Banks are competition, but I don't feel as if... Depends what you mean by competition. I mean, I don't see anyone as a direct threat to us personally.
Okay.
But there are a lot of other people out there that will give decent advice, and if we don't keep up with them and keep modernising the journey...
So you don't feel threatened right where you are, but you recognise there's people out there doing stuff. Talk to me more about competition, because there isn't a right or wrong here. That, you know, you either feel it or you don't. You either know it's there or you don't. Some of you will feel it. Gordon.
I suppose from my business perspective, I think the private banks are the biggest competition, because you just get bombarded, or my potential client base is bombarded with stuff from these guys.
Really?
Constantly.
Okay. That's interesting.
And they've got the, I suppose, the financial resources to continually hammer home their message.
Yeah.
And that's about to provide a crap service, but that's an aside.
Yeah, you know, what's really interesting is... It doesn't matter that you think they provide a rubbish service. It just doesn't matter. The bottom line is, if they won the client, you haven't. The fact that you know what's going on in the bank is just totally irrelevant. If I'm the prospective client, then I've got to make a decision. And if someone draws me towards them, then they've won. The fact that you may sit there going, yeah, that's rubbish, is irrelevant. They've won me. Now, they may not keep me, but then again, they might do, because they may get better. Peter.
I ran across, I should have ran across it. I ran across an IFA a few years back. I asked him for his business card. He says, I don't carry a business card. I don't have any competition. All my customers come to me. And he's such an obnoxious person, he's walked away. But the challenge that I should have challenged him is, does that mean you serve everyone that has at least £1 to invest in the UK? You know, clearly, he doesn't know his market. He's probably converted everyone that's approached him. But what about all the hordes of people that would be ideal clients for him that he's just not exposed to?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Anybody else talk about competition? Stu? So who's got?
St James's Place.
St James's Place?
In my market.
Really? Okay.
Because the market, the sheer power of the marketing. I think Harvey's Lansdowne are competition.
Right.
Again, because the power of the marketing. They're not offering the same product, but they bring in all sorts, which just happens to include some people who are my target market.
Yeah. Who loves Harvey's Lansdowne? I think they're brilliant.
I respect
them. No, that's not what I said. Who loves them, thinks they're brilliant? Who respects them, even if they don't like them very much? Why do you respect them so much?
They're excellent at what they do. They're excellent at what they do. Their right. marketing is so slick, and I've got to make this just to see what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you know, they make
money. Eric, your view?
They're very specific in what they do, and they know that exactly, and they do it very well. So yeah. They're not trying to advise people, but they've got a good model.
They're selling products, they're not providing a service.
Okay. Do they care?
No.
If you talk to the MD, I've been down to see Hargreaves Lansdowne. If you talk to the MD of Hargreaves Lansdowne, in the first two sentences, he will introduce the word marketing. They know exactly what they're about. They don't give a hoot what you think. Not interested in what you think. They're turning it over a multi-million pound business because they're brilliant at what they've decided to be brilliant at. They're marketeers, and they're phenomenal at it. And you know what? The public think they're phenomenal too, which is why they invest in them. And they couldn't give a hoot. You know, as far as they're concerned, everybody else is on a high horse just pontificating. It doesn't matter if we're right and wrong. The fact is, they are creaming it. And at what they do, the reason I respect them is they do a phenomenally good job. They're marketeers. It doesn't mean you have to copy them, but you can learn a lot from your competition. Research your competition and learn from them. Most of you know that, you know, I study wisdom literature a lot, and I study the scriptures as a Christian. And there's a really interesting phrase in the Old Testament. I think it's the Old Testament. The children of light can learn much from the children of darkness. Okay, the fact that you're good and better than is not the issue here. You can learn a lot from those that actually you probably hate.
Well, Hargreaves Lansdown, the children of darkness.
Well, yeah. This is being recorded. All right, page 15.
That was Andrew
Nevitt,
by the way.
Yeah, Andrew Nevitt, based in... yeah, they do have tanks as well at Hargreaves. What do I mean by, if I'm going to go out and win clients, I need to understand this next page 15, context. What's all that about? What's all that about? Context. Big business words. Go on. What do I mean by that?
I'm guessing you kind of mean that if you're trying to position your own business, you need to assess its capabilities and its resource, its strengths, and technical abilities and its processes and all that stuff that goes on in a business, and say in the outside world with all the dynamics of what clients are looking for, of political change and demographic changes, how do I match my internal business to the external business to maximise what I want in my own business? Where are the gaps? How do I strategically position my business to get out of the environment the most that I can or the most that I want?
That's a really good explanation. You want to swap places? That's really good. And here's the flip side to that. If you ignore the context of what's going on within and without you, you will stumble and fail in marketing. If you just ignore it, if you try something that's inappropriate to the current marketplace, i.e. the recession that we're in, so for you that may be phenomenal failure, and you may think, doesn't work this marketing stuff, because you just took no notice of the context of what was going on around you. You just ignored it in oblivion. So understand what's going on inside you, understand what's going on outside you before you leap into seminars, you know, advertising, Google AdWords, social media, all this other stuff that we're going to learn about later on this year. Understand the context of where you're playing. Inside the business, what's going on? Outside the business, what's going on? And take note of it before you start leaping about spending loads of money and time on marketing. So beware about that. Ignore that at your cost before you then decide on your marketing strategy. See, what will happen is you'll go away from this workshop and think, oh, I know a lot of stuff about how to attract clients, and you go into your website and you do your brochure, and you just won't do it in context with what's going on around you. You need to understand everything that's going on around you and your competition. Let me give you an example of competition that really scared me the other day. I was at the cinema having a really nice time watching, I think it was Avatar, and before came on all the adverts. I hate the adverts. Wendy loves them, so we have to get there on early. I'm never allowed to get there late. I have to get there early to watch the adverts. And I think it was NatWest came on with an advert. And you know what? It was really, really good. They didn't mention products once. It was just talking about the baby that's due to come and the pram that they bought and... You're not never going to buy that car, are you? You're joking. What with that going on? You know, there's all this lifestyle, life events, significant life events, context going on in the conversation. And it wasn't a whole... You caught snippets of the conversation. Really clever. It was like you zoomed into the conversation and zoomed out again, went to another conversation, and it just kept doing this. It was really clever, but you caught enough to understand what was going on in that home with the advisor sitting there in the armchair, relaxing and chatting to them. I thought, that is really clever marketing. Not a mention of product. So, if you think, oh, I better get on board with life planning, NatWest adverts, forget about the NatWest advisors, it's irrelevant. The NatWest adverts attracting the clients are already ahead of you. The adverts are into life planning. Even if the advisors are a year behind and got to catch up, that's not relevant. This is about client attraction before the first meeting ever happens. And if they get the client in their office, you've lost. Think about it. Ooh, must get them a George Kinder course. Hey, they're a year ahead of you in their advertising and marketing. Really clever. You may think, I don't have the money for the Simra advertising. You don't need to. First of all, you have to have your message. Okay, and the final page, page 16. What's all that about, Wendy? I know. I've got to take notes as well, Dave.
I'm
going
to be able to read
my notes. Yes. Wendy and Andy. Wendy, take the left hand, and Andy, take the right hand. Andy Mac. Andy Mac. McLaughlin. What's all that about? What's that got to do with getting ready strategically for marketing?
Was I left or right hand? Sorry.
You were left. Sorry.
Right.
If you think you already know, write down some notes by each of those boxes. Who might that be? What do I mean by external influences in my marketing strategy?
It could be anybody, really. It could be your clients, it could be friends, it could be other businesses.
Right.
You could go out there and like pitch your ideas to them, because their feedback is absolutely essential.
Okay.
If they like it, but they don't.
So if they're influencers, Wendy, who am I hoping they're going to influence?
Other clients.
Yeah, or... Think about where, let's put this in context. So there's you, there's a prospective client. Who might influence them up here? What type of business or being? So there's you. Who might push them towards you? Could be existing clients. Who else might influence their opinion?
Connection.
Sorry?
Professional connection.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Your marketing material.
Sorry, Ian.
Your marketing material.
Yeah, but I'm talking about external influence outside of your business.
Word of mouth.
Family and friends?
Yeah, could be family and friends. Fundamentally, anybody that is in an influential position as far as your target client is concerned. I've even had people send people to me who are not my clients. So the influencer wasn't my client. They're simply influential in moving people towards me. So for example, Peter is not my client. But already there's a Martin who through Peter wants to talk to me urgently. He's an influencer. Yeah? Peter's a marketing consultant. He quite frequently talks to IFAs. Been a marketing director in the insurance industry. So he kind of understands us. So there are external influences. And your challenge, Wendy, is do you know how to work on these people to get them to push people towards? Do you know how to do that? It's a highly skilled marketing strategy. And you need to learn it. Strategy. Internal support. What do I mean by that, Andy?
Within your own business. Within your own business we're talking about.
Yeah, well, it could be.
I think that's understanding where perhaps you are at the moment, and that you've got the ability to attract, service the type of clients that you're looking to attract.
All right. Very good. Here's the problem I have with most small IFAs, and frankly, we're all small. You know, by small I mean less than about 30 people. Micro businesses, one person, you know, a person and a dog, or a person and a paraplanner, a person and a pussycat. That's a micro business. One person supported by one or two other people. It's called a micro business. Small business tends to be up to about, I don't know, 30, 40 people, Peter? People? Yeah?
Well,
definition of SME is up to 250, but small business.
So small and medium-sized enterprises, anywhere up to 250. Small business, small than that, but micro business, one person and a paraplanner and a whatever, pushcat. Okay, so most of us here are micro businesses, right? We are.
Dave, what's the pussycat
doing? Pussycat, yeah, we're going to learn about... Yes. You don't have one at your... You don't have pet culture in your business.
Not in the business.
Do you not?
Okay. Pussycats at home.
Do you know how they can work?
Yes. I just assumed that was somewhere in the IFA marketing manifesto, but obviously I missed that one out. Look, that you can't do this on your own. And if you try to, you are making a huge mistake. The challenge with the IFA industry is it's brought up as a cottage industry. That's how we've grown up. And to continue in that isolated silo and try and be successful, in my view, is a huge mistake. You need to get out and collaborate with others who can work with you. You need advisor Jim in a circle members to collaborate with each other.
Yeah, you're going to see mentors, people who, coaches.
Yeah.
You know, all the best sportsmen in the world, Tiger Woods.
Bless him.
Andy Murray. all your rugby players, all your footballers all have coaches. Why should you as a businessman have a coach also?
Yeah, network, collaborate. Have joint alliances with people that you can get on with. Seek them out. And work out that your internal support team, you also need to collaborate with rather than just use them. Okay, we tend just to dump and delegate on internal support. Now you need to strategically collaborate. Help them to understand where you're going. Let them understand the business vision in detail.
Can I just add a wee thing about your small businesses and the cottage industry type thing? I believe that is what the FSA think that IFAs are. They don't really want business to go towards banks and large networks. They really don't want to be dealing with small individuals. And they still think of us as a cottage industry.
Yeah.
Making your phone calls and your own processes and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and the challenge is that most people outside there, outside of this industry, regard us as a cottage industry. They all, you know, other businesses regard us as a tiny cottage industry. And it's a struggle for them to understand how we're going to survive. And in fact, if you do any research on what's happened in the USA and Australia over the last 5 years to their cottage industry, you realise that we are in a very, very rapid consolidation period. I would guess in about 2013, about 50% of the current cottage industry will no longer exist. Not because they've gone out of the industry, but they've decided to consolidate. And it's going to happen that fast. The consolidation period in Australia and the USA was terrifyingly fast. People were just gobbling each other up to survive. And you're right, the FSA is frightened witless by the cottage industry culture that we've grown up in.
They can't cope.
And they're terrified of the very survival of the cottage industry because in their view it can't survive as a cottage industry. It's just not a sustainable business operation. To them, that is not a way to run a business. To the government, this is not the way to run a business. It's not a business, it's just a bunch of guys, you know, with a paraplan. And that's part of the problem. And that's why you're getting hit so hard, because they don't regard you as a business. And that's why all that we teach here in the Advisor Gym is about stop being a better IFA. That's a given that you're the best at technically what you do. Start learning how to run a small business, because that will get you off their radar once you do that. That's what they want, businesses, not IFA practices. That frightens the pants off them, genuinely. They really are quite frightened. This is not a sustainable operation, the UK national IFA fraternity is just not a sustainable community. They want everybody to be business people, not better IFAs. Better IFAs is a given. Qualified, you know, diploma, whatever you're aiming for, chartered, certified, that's a given to them. That's just not an argument anymore. It's not a discussion. It's over. It's can you run a small business is the underlying question of everything you do and everything you're compliantly looked at. TCF got nothing to do with treating clients fairly. It's to do with do you know how to run a small business? That's what's going on. So marketing is do you know how to run a small business to market it? That is the agenda. Can you run a small business? Not a better IFA practice, a small business. Then you're off our radar.